Well, thank you very much. Perhaps I could just start by congratulating the people who've organised this splendid event. And at least I hope it'll be splendid. That's up to us. You must judge for yourselves. Well, the Battle of Lewes was fought, as you all know, on the 14th of May, 1264. So not quite at this time of year, a little bit on into the early summer, whereas now, of course, it's, early, middle spring. But I think it's not very difficult for you Lewisians and people from around to sort of cast your minds back and imagine what it must have been like on that great and terrible day. Lewes was a very, very dangerous place to be, and I hope all of you had either evacuated it or were deep in your cellars, of which we've heard there are some underground here. If not, you might well have ended up in one of those three pits, which when they were making the Lewes-Brighton Turnpike Road in 1810, by the prison, they found three pits, each with 500 bodies by estimate in it. So I hope you wouldn't have ended up in one of those. Well, what I'm going to do briefly this morning is to look at two things. First of all, I want to look at the battle itself and ask why Lewes, why was it fought here? And secondly, what happened at Lewes? And I want to review some of the new discoveries, new interpretations of the last generation. And then the second part of my talk, again, using new material and letting you see some of the new insights about the battle, I want to look at how the battle was regarded by contemporaries. In other words, what did people think about this extraordinary, momentous event? So, without more ado, let me plunge in. And let me plunge in with the military situation at the beginning of the war in March 1264. Now, I'm not going to talk about the wider political context, because that is in the very safe hands of people who will be talking after me. So the war broke out in March 1264, and the great bases of Simon de Montfort at the beginning of the war were firstly in the south. He controlled Dover, and above all, which was the fulcrum of much of his movement, he held London, and the citizens of London were all behind him. Now, his other great bases were in the Midlands. He has this magnificent castle he's built, rebuilt at Kenilworth. He's Lord of Leicester. He has Warwick. And then he has a forward base at Northampton. So there's Montfort in the south and also in the Midlands. Now, the king, King Henry III, and let's have a look at King Henry III. Here he is on his effigy in Westminster Abbey, wonderful gilt bronze effigy done about 20 years after his death. I think he looks slightly worried, doesn't he? Slightly perturbed. Henry, of course, was a Rex Pacificus, or at any rate, he had no genius in the business of war. Nonetheless, at Lewes, he had to fight. And so I thought slightly more appropriate might be the image of him, can't quite see that, I think it's okay, on his seal, which does show him, as perhaps so many of the great men, nobles and knights looked at Lewes, very much on his horse, brandishing his sword and with his shield and with one of these great metal helms over his head. So perhaps that gives you a sort of feeling for what a lot of people looked like here in Lewes on the 14th of May, 1264. So at the beginning of the war, Montfort bases in the south and in the Midlands. And Henry III, just like Charles I in the 1640s, set up his standard at Oxford, very strategic place, midway between, cutting a raft between the two Montfortian bases. And it was Henry who began the war. He began the war. He marched north out of Oxford early in April and had a terrific success. He took straight away Northampton. That was on the April the 5th, 1264. So the war starts very badly for Montfort. And it's at that point that we see Montfort's genius as a commander and as a strategist. Because if the art of war is to make your opponent dance to your tune, up till now, it had been Henry who had been playing the tune. Now it was Montfort's turn. And he took three great military decisions, which I'll run through, and which brought us here to Lewes. And the key thing about those decisions was that they were all battle-seeking. His aim is to bring the king to battle. And that was an extraordinarily courageous thing to do because all the chroniclers agree Montfort's forces were smaller than those of the king in 1264. Yet Montfort wants to fight. And the reason for that is I think he had supreme confidence in his own military ability, but he also had confidence in the righteousness of his cause. Now, the first decision he took was to march out of London after he's heard of the fall of Northampton, and not trail away trying to meet the king up in the Midlands, expending energy and resources as he did, but instead to take an initiative himself, and he goes south and he lays siege to Rochester. Now, he does that because that's the one main base of the king in the south. And the aim was, well, take Rochester if you can, but the essential aim was to bring the king's army south. So he's bringing the king's army to him, not having to go to seek it. And that worked extremely well because Henry immediately comes south, relieves the siege of Rochester, and Montfort then goes back into London to gather his resources. Now, after Henry had taken Rochester on the 17th of April, he then decides to secure the Channel ports, and his aim was then to blockade Montfort in London. Well, Montfort wasn't having that, because he then takes the second great decision of the war. He marches out of London on the 5th of May, and his aim is to bring Henry's forces to battle. He's going to fight a bit like Charles I at Naseby, as recommended by Digby, but with very different results. He's going to fight with all, for all. Or, as Montfort would have said it in French, tout pour tout. He would have fought all for all, tout pour tout. And so Montfort advances out of London, and it's at that point the king, 10th, 11th, 12th of May, comes to Lewis. Now, knowing Montfort is on the loose looking for him. Now, that wasn't a fearful or defensive decision on Henry's part at all. And I say Henry, but really probably the strategy is being run by his tremendously impressive warlike son, already well over 6 foot 2 tall, the Lord Edward, and probably by his canny brother, Richard, Earl of Cornwall, who's also, of course, king of Germany. So it's probably them who are masterminding the strategy. Well, going to Lewis was not in any way, as I say, a defensive or fearful move. It was a great and obvious base from which you could gather your forces together and then fight against Montfort. Why? Because, of course, the castle and the town at Lewes were controlled by one of Henry's greatest baronial supporters, John de Warenne, Earl of Surrey. And there was also, of course, the lovely, amazing monastery of St. Pancras. And that's the great thing which is missing in Lewes, isn't it? The castle is still there. We have to think of this huge monastery there too. And there, of course, Henry himself could stay. You know, it was a place the whole army could be based in security and also in supplies. So Henry goes to Lewes. And Montfort, of course, has an answer to that too, because he has a base not very far from Lewes, because he's Lord of Fletching, 7 miles north of Lewes. And it's there that Montfort established his army about the 11th and 12th of May. And then we come to the third great military decision, perhaps the most daring of them all, because what Montfort then did on the night of the 13th, the 14th of May, was to go on one of those great night marches, one of the most difficult exercises in war. And I remember giving a sort of variant of this talk not so long ago, and there was veterans from Dunkirk who said how terrible night marches were, being in Montgomery's 3rd Division in 1940, when they did an amazing night march. Well, this is a night march of equivalent difficulty and indeed success, because what Montfort did was to, in the night of the 13th, 14th May, march his army up onto the Downs, so that in the morning, when the king in the priory, Edward in the castle, woke up, they saw to their horror that Montfort's forces were arrayed on the top of the towns above them. And of course, that gave Montfort the tremendous strategic advantage of being able to come down the hill. Now, it's at this point we come to the first of, I think, the things which discovered in last great research about all this, more than 20 years ago. And that is, what was Montfort's actual route up onto the Downs. And here you can all have a look at the little map, which has been placed in the back of your Battle of Lewes thing, which is actually the very last thing before the distinguished list of delegates on its back. And that actually shows Montfort's route up onto the Downs. Now, most previous commentators had thought that the route up onto the Downs was one up by Ofham chalk pits. I think that's completely wrong. What Montfort did was to take a much wider sweep up onto the Downs, as you can see from that map. And I think there were very good reasons for doing that, because, of course, if you'd gone up by Ofham chalk pits, highly likely you would have been heard and discovered. Take a much wider sweep away from Lewes up onto the Downs. You can do so much more in security, much less likely to be found out. So how do we know that? Well, that's where a new piece of evidence came to light. Well, it was really an old piece of evidence, but no one had ever used it. And this is an extraordinary account of the Battle of Lewes on the flyleaf of a canon law treatise, believe it or not, preserved in the British Library. So this great sort of incredibly boring thing about canon law. And then on this sort of flyleaf, there's this detailed account of the Battle of Lewes. And what it actually says at this point is that the army of the barons came to Boxholt, which place is 2 miles from Lewes. Well, it then, of course, becomes absolutely essential to discover where is Boxholt, and it's not on any modern map. And the great hero here was John Bleach, who, through a series of investigations, did discover it, and discovered it, first of all, on a map of 1772. And actually, it is indeed up on the Downs, on the edge of the Downs. It's about 500 yards southwest of Black Cap. And it's currently occupied by a small wood. Now, there's a trackway, a very large trackway, going up onto the Downs, leading straight to Boxholt. And I'm sure it's that trackway which Montfort took. Now, since then, I think one other key piece of information about Boxholt has come to light, and this is thanks really to the research of Christopher Wittick. And it's this, that Boxholt wasn't just any old place up on the Downs. It was actually the place where the sheriff's court met for the rape of Lewes. So it's actually a very well-known place. And so, as Christopher's remarked to me, saying see you at Boxholt was a bit like saying see you at Trafalgar Square. And so I think this is hugely important because, obviously, what it meant was it was a wonderful rendezvous centre, and you can imagine the word going round. Of course, keep it dark to the people in Lewes itself, but, you know, we're meeting at Boxholt. We're meeting at Boxholt. That's where we've got to be on the morning of the 14th of May. And you can imagine Montfort's army was swelled by the word going round amongst the local gentry and peasantry. I often wondered what a metal detecting work up at Boxholt will do, and my only reservation there, or warning to you all, is that if you discover one of Henry III's gold pennies there, it's mine. I bag it, because it's the most valuable British coin at auction. I think only 7 survive. Only 2 are in private hands, and the last went for £250,000 at auction. So don't forget that. So Montfort, therefore, has reached Boxholt. And that brings us to the next question, which is, where was then the battle itself fought? Now, still on Ordnance Survey maps, one still sees that wonderful crossed swords indicating that the battle was fought up on the Downs. And I think that's quite wrong. The only truth is it is true that Henry's son, the Lord Edward, chased the Londoners, right, a bit like Prince Rupert in those Civil War battles, way over the top of the Downs and killed a lot of them up there. So that's true. Part of the battle, or part of the pursuit, took place over the Downs. But I think there's no doubt at all that the main fulcrum of the battle wasn't there at all. And where it was is beautifully displayed in this splendid Victorian photograph of Lewes, which really gives you by far the best view of the battle field. And as you can see, it's taken, I think, probably from the castle. There's St. Anne's Church. Here's the top of the Downs. And of course, all this is now built up. Here, this is the Wallands down here. And I think what's clear is that where Montfort's army was on the morning was up here on the top of the Downs there. And then Henry's his central division is there in front of St. Anne's Church, the left-hand division down there, and Edward comes out of the castle and does indeed chase the Londoners up there. So the battle is basically fought from here down all over the area of the prison, which of course is where those pits were found in this area, back to the town and into the town. Okay, well, that's very easy to assert. How do we know it's true? Well, we've got two pieces, crucial piece of evidence about this, and they both fix the site of the battle by reference to two mills. I think, in fact, two different mills. Now, the first of these references is, again, in this canon law treatise, or the Gilson, which was published by J.P. Gilson in 1898. And having got the barons to Boxholt, Montfort to Boxholt, he then says that Montfort's army proceeded at a slow pace, having formed into divisions, to the mill which is outside the House of the Lepers at Lewes, and there the king came to meet them. So the question here is, where is the House of the Lepers at Lewes? And where is the mill outside the House of the Lepers? Now, I think clear that research shows that the House of the Lepers was the Hospital of St. Nicholas. And that was just outside, opposite the prison. Again, here, Hospital of St. Nicholas would be sort of somewhere here. It's, of course, for many years, its site was that of a county primary school. It's now a council day centre. There have been important excavations of its cemetery, sadly not actually showing, I think, very much from the battle itself. So we know where the leper house was. Notice it was outside the town, as so many leper houses were. What about the mill outside the House of Lepers? Now, I feel sure that it was referring to a mill up here. And you can see there's still a mill there in the 19th century when this photograph was taken. And in the 18th century, that mill there was called the Spittle Mill, the Hospital Mill. And, of course, it's a Spittle Road lane which goes up to it. So I think that the mill outside the House of Lepers, which Montfort came to, is clearly that mill. And that fits so well, doesn't it? Because what it means is he brought the army from Boxholt over here, up here, and put them on the top of the Downs there, around the site of that mill. But of course, and then the king comes out to meet them, but that doesn't mean he gets to the top of the hill and the battle's fought up there, because where the battle is fought is identified by another mill, and that's the mill which the Chronicle of Lewes itself says the battle was fought at, and it's called Snelling's Mill. Now, Snelling is a well-known personal name in Lewes, and again, Christopher Whittick, who I sometimes feel should be giving this talk, he's identified Snelling's Mill in 1535, late as 1575. There's a reference to Snelling's Mill down. So where's Snelling's Mill? Well, I don't think it's actually this mill. It was another mill, which is shown on a map of 1620. If we go on, it's this mill here, just in front of St. Anne's Church. That's Snelling's Mill. And so that's where the heart of the battle was, around here. The prison would be just somewhere up here. And just to go back again to our picture of the battlefield. So Snelling's Mill here. So in other words, what happened at the battle was that Edward drove the Londoners up there. Montfort, meanwhile, with one division, with the Earl of Gloucester with another division, they crumb down the hill with all the advantages of going down. They crash into the king's, Richard of Cornwall's forces somewhere here, drive them back to the mill there where Richard of Cornwall was taken prisoner, and the king is driven back to the priory. I think there were some accounts which suggested the king was captured on the field, but I think the best accounts of contemporary accounts of the battle are absolutely clear. He got back to the priory and wasn't taken on the field. Of course, according to the Battle Chronicle. The Lewis Chronicle. Henry was much beaten by swords and maces and had two horses killed under him. So he had a very bad time. It always reminds me of the remark of Dr. Johnson when he was told that the poet Oliver Goldsmith had been involved in a fight. And Johnson said, he was beaten, sir. I do not hear he did much beating. And I suspect that was probably true of Henry at the Battle of Lewes. Well, the next day, Edward, of course, comes back, joins his father in the priory, is persuaded not to go out to fight again. The next day they surrender, and that leads us in to the period of Montfortian rule until his defeat and death at the Battle of Evesham. Now, I've said it was a very dangerous place to be, and, of course, as our percentage-wise, the chances of any of us being in this room, being knights and nobles, is quite small. We'd all be peasants, basically. It was dangerous for you and me. Well, actually, not for me, because I'll be a knight, and all the rest of you, perhaps Baroness Andrews, of course, will be perfectly safe. But apart from her and me and perhaps the speakers, the rest of you are in great peril, because, in a way, you're in peril, we're not, because Lewes was the last of the great chivalric battles. Very few knights and nobles were actually killed at it, and that's because they were perfectly protected by their armour, and when they couldn't fight anymore, they were surrendered, and their surrenders were accepted. Whereas, of course, the lightly armed peasants and Londoners, us having wonderful time killing all the rest of you. That was the basic pattern of lots of these medieval battles. Lewes was the last battle like that. Evesham was very different. Knights and nobles were killed.